Blog Talk Radio.
Network. I am your host, Shafia Kabir, Life Empowerment Strategist, and welcome again to Free Talk Friday. As always, it's my pleasure to be here with you, and I pray that your week has been blessed thus far and that you're enjoying your Friday night. As always, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for sharing this time with me. I never take it for granted for those who are listening in. I appreciate your support as well as my Initiative Network family. I appreciate you as well. So as always, Free Talk Friday, no holds barred. But we're going to be talking this evening more about economics. You all know that if you're listening to me, this is a passion of mine. If it's your first time tuning in on a Friday night, welcome. If it's your first time on the Initiative Radio Network listening to a show, welcome again as well. We appreciate all of your support. We know that we get support from across the country and throughout the world, and for that we are grateful. But grab your glass of wine, grab your cup of tea, grab your smoothie, grab your cup of coffee, grab some water, whatever it is and listen in. If you are listening over the phone, you can, if you want to comment or you have a question or anything you'd like to share, just press 1, and I will unmute your line and let you say what you have to say. Again, this is no holds barred topic. You're free to say what you'd like to say, but please know, get out of pocket, I will mute you back. But no, for the most part, anything that we talk about is that's relevant to the topic, I welcome, because I don't claim to know anything. This is just my perspective, and my perspective and my view is not always that of the Initiative Radio Network. I don't claim to speak for everyone, but this is just a passion of mine, helping our people to understand the different dynamics of economics, helping our people understand the importance of strong families, of strong relationships, of building a stronger foundation for our children and our grandchildren and our grandchildren's children. That's my heart. And that's what I love to talk about. That's what I love to teach about. That's what I love to converse about. So if you're listening via the app, please feel free to dial 563-999-3682. And you can also, if you have something that you would like to share, just press 1, and I will unmute your line. Again, that number is 563-999-3682. And the last couple of weeks, we have been talking about redefining wealth building. And the first week, show, we were talking about understanding one of the 15 things that rich people teach their children that poor people don't. And if you are listening by the app, the shows are recorded. Also, if you're on my Facebook page, the shows are recorded, so you can always go back and click the link on the picture. And my Facebook is Shafia Kabira. If you want to request me, you can do that. But you can also listen to that show. But the 15 lessons that rich people teach their children that poor people don't. And I think that it just bears repeating again that rich people are teaching their children the game of economics. Poor people just go along with what economics is. Now, I'm the type of person that always looks deeply into the words and the vocabulary that we use. So I also think that it's important to understand that being poor is not always your economic status. Being poor is not always how much money you have in the bank, how much money you have in your pocket, what kind of car you drive, what kind of house you live in. Poverty is a state of mind. And you might be like, well, if that's true, then how come I see so many people that say that they want to be rich and they, you know, rich people don't seem to have a poor state of mind? It's a quality of life. So I believe there are a lot of us as a people who have a lot of things. We may even have money, but it doesn't get passed down to the next generation, or we pass down debt, or we look prosperous on the outside, but our bank accounts say another thing. Our credit card balances say another thing. And we're just learning how to shuffle debt. So we are depressed in our minds, and we're angry, and we're bitter, and we're just not living. We're just existing, trying to keep up with the quote-unquote Joneses and trying to keep this facade up that we're doing okay by our material possessions. So therefore, again, I say that I believe that poor is a state of mind. Poverty is a state of mind. So if you're failing to teach your children, or you're failing to teach some youth that is close to you the power of the dollar and how money works and how wealth works and what they can be doing to improve themselves and make themselves a commodity, then you're not being valuable to your family. You know, you're not really expressing your full worth and value to your family. So that was what we talked about a couple weeks ago, and then last week We talked about the foundation of real wealth, understanding what's at the foundation of real wealth. And to me, that's a strong family. It's a strong relationship, being able to talk about economics, being able to have the conversation, which leads us into our topic tonight about marriage, money, and family matters. And you've probably heard it before. If you haven't, you will tonight. But one of the leading causes of divorce is money. And when I really think about it, my biggest question, always hearing that statistic or that quote, is why? Why would money be such a big issue in divorce? Like, the number one cause, I think, is infidelity. Second is money issues. And third is lack of communication. But to think about the fact that people are leaving their spouses because of money, that they're breaking up their homes because of money, is very concerning, especially when we as Black people, we have a low percentage rate of marriage anyway. And for some people, they think that marriage is antiquated. They think marriage is just a piece of paper. So what's the big importance? Maybe it's just a psychological thing for some people, but when you get married to someone, you make a commitment to someone, when you are formally agreeing to be in covenant with that person, you are agreeing to live your life together as one unit, you're agreeing to change your name, you're agreeing to enter into different contracts together as a married person, that changes the way that you move throughout your relationship. And if it wasn't so significant, then you wouldn't see the attitudes of people change once they become married, or you wouldn't see so many people being pressed to want to get married. But the fact that someone is willing to leave their marriage, break up their family because of money, is something that we need to look at. We also need to look at the fact of why are we, as Black people, not entering into marriage, which is, I talked about that before on the show. I'm not going to get into that tonight, but some of the articles that I looked at, when they show that it says that money is ruining marriage in America. And, I mean, I guess when I look back at my own marriage and I thought about how my ex-husband and I handled our money, our financials, because of I got married, I think, right soon after I turned 21, so I was really young. Some of you have heard me say before that my father was a pastor, and so they had very traditional views on how a family works, as far as man being head of the household and a woman being, underneath the man. I was supposed to be the breadwinner in that. A woman was supposed to stay at home, but that wasn't what was actually carried out in the home. But that was what was being taught. That was what was being fed into my psyche. So when I did get married, that was the unspoken goal. I think we never really talked about it. And again, it's kind of mind-boggling, the things that we don't talk about before we enter marriage, the conversations that we don't have before we enter marriage, and the conversations that we don't have after we're in marriage. We're supposed to enter into marriage with our friend, with somebody that we love, and we're willing to get naked with the person physically, but we're not willing to get naked with the person emotionally or spiritually. So we have all of these different issues and problems that crop up in our marriages, and then we want to know why things don't work and things are really batshit crazy. But again, I was practicing Islam, so we got married, started having children right away. He was working. I remember I was pregnant with our son, and I had started working at a hotel, and I was told that I shouldn't work because it was planting the seed of slavery into my child, mental slavery. I don't know if the thought of planting mental slavery because I was working a job was worse than the fact that we were in an impoverished state, but, that's another topic for another day. So my ex-husband was working. When we got married, I was working. I ended up losing my job soon after we got married. And he moved in with me into my apartment, but my lease was up, so we ended up getting a house. He was working at a mortgage company, and then he just one day up and quit. So about a month after I ended up having our oldest child, we moved in with my parents, and we lived in their basement for a couple of years because I had my oldest son, my second oldest son, and my oldest daughter there, and I was not working, which was not something that I was used to because I had started working when I was 15, and I had always worked at a job or two and went to school and didn't do anything but save my money, and I was used to having my own money and doing what I needed to do with it. So when it came time, now, around this time, I believe, was when my ex-husband decided that we were going to invest our tax refund into starting our own business, which is something that I recommend, as long as you know what you're doing. He did know what he was doing. He had been in the bail bond industry for many years, so he was familiar with that industry, and he had a friend of his also that was. So they took our tax refunds and they pulled them together, ended up getting a contract, getting into bail bonds. But still, we were living in my mother's basement, and he wasn't really concerned about getting out of there, but I was. And I told him that I refused to live like that anymore. So I did what we as black women do often, we go make things happen. And I went and applied for different services that I knew. I've been the truth a little bit to get the funding that I needed to be able to have us move into our own house. It wasn't the best, but it was my mother's basement. And as a grown woman, I was proud of it because it was my own. Still, we never talked about finances. We never talked about if he needed my help financially. We never talked about budgeting, even though he was the one that was making the money. He was supposed to be paying the bills, but that never really got done. So I also was in school at this time. I was going for my bachelor's in management. So I started helping him doing the bookkeeping, the record keeping of his business because that wasn't getting done either. And I saw that there was a need for that. Soon after we moved into the house, I ended up pregnant again with our second daughter. And things started going crazy in our marriage. Again, we were not discussing any finances, anything like that. We ended up splitting up for a little while and ended up moving the house that we were in. And there's a reason that I'm telling this story, so please bear with me. So we moved back to my mother's house, and I was 9 months pregnant with our second daughter, but I refused to have another baby at my mother's house. We ended up finding another house, and he was still running his own business. I was still doing my best to help him. We put a makeshift office up in our basement. At this time, I started trying to find little side hustles. I think I started trying to sell Avon. I started selling some other type of party planning thing. Like you get this, you pay so much, like $49.95, and you get this box of different products and magazines, and you show the products to people, and you take the magazine, let them place the order, you order it, and then you deliver it. It was that kind of deal. Or you hold a party at someone's house, they agree to be a hostess, and you know how that works. Again, I was bending the truth so that we could get on food stamps, and he wasn't managing the money well again, so our lights were getting turned off, and I was selling food stamps to my mother so I could get extra dollars to buy Pampers and feminine hygiene products. And when I think back again, I ask myself at this point, why did you never sit down with your husband and say, listen, we need to sit down and do a budget. We need to look at where we're spending our money, and this is what we need to do. Now, I did that when it came to the business because I was like, listen, you're bringing in this amount of money, and this is the amount of money that's going out, and you're still overdrawn in your business account. What is really going on? So, again, the mindset, the money mindset that I believe that I was functioning under was the fact that he was a breadwinner, I was a woman, I'm a stay-at-home person, my job is not as important as his, he's the one that's making all the money, I got to leave it up to him, and I don't have a right to ask about what is happening in our finances, what's happening with that money. So I knew how much he was bringing in, and I knew that there was more than enough to take care of us, but I never raised the question. Again, why? Why do we not raise these questions in our relationships, in our marriages when it comes to money? So eventually we ended up getting divorced, obviously. And as I've told this many times, what really changed my mind about how I thought about money, how I was going to move about money, how I was going to make sure I took control of my finances as a woman with children now, I read a book by the writer of Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, his wife Kim, and it was called Rich Women. And in this book, she talked about running into women who had either become widowed or they were either divorced and the whole marriage, their husbands had handled the finances and they never asked any questions. So when he died, they didn't know anything about what was going on with the bills. They had no idea how to pay the bills. They didn't know where the savings accounts were. They didn't know if there were any stocks or any bonds. They didn't know if there were any CDs, if there were any investments, none of that. Or when they ended up getting a divorce, he was able to say what he was going to take from the marriage, and he was the one that had provided everything. She wasn't entitled to anything, although she was the one holding down the house and holding down the children and doing all of those things. She had no clue what was going on. And the other thing was reading that women who have children and they end up getting divorced usually end up in poverty because they've relied on their husband and the man to take full responsibility of the finances, and they don't know how to cope. They don't know how to go out and get a job or go out and make up for the loss of income that they've been relying on. Also, so many women stay in abusive relationships because of what reason? Money. They don't know how to make it without their abuser because their abuser usually has isolated them to the point where they're the breadwinner and they're the ones that are providing the economic stability for the woman. So instead of leaving and having to go fend for herself or leaving and having to take her children and putting them in an impoverished state, she would rather take the abuse because why? The money's still there. The stability of the economic is still there. So when we look at the dynamics of money and the money mindset and how it deals, how it's persuasive in our families and the decision-making process and how it keeps us in the state that we're in without even knowing it, bigger than we even begin to even imagine or look at. I also talked about last week, who was it that influenced the money mindset or the money paradigm that you function off of? And I shared with you all about how my mother was a big influencer when it came to my money mindset. That no matter how much she had, it just wasn't enough. And I don't know if she picked that up growing up because there was 11 children. And my grandfather, he was a preacher. My grandmother was a stay-at-home mother. And you know, I don't think she said that they got an inside toilet till she was in high school or something like that. So it was even the fact that there was probably lack there because there was so many children. And subconsciously she adopted the thought that no matter what, you know, you got to live poor, you got to live this way in order to be able to survive. Also, I know that there was a mindset there for her that in order to be more righteous, I guess you could use that word, as a Christian, that you had to be poor. You had to give away everything that you had. And the poorer that you were perceived, the more righteous that you were. Again, there's not really, sometimes when we function from different subconscious thoughts, there's not a lot of rationale there. If we were to stop and think and actually try to put it in a way where we'd be like, you know what, that really doesn't make a lot of sense. But when you're functioning subconsciously, you don't think about what's bringing that in. So, again, the question that I asked last week, it's going to influence how you think about money and how is that playing out in your life. Maybe it was a hardworking aunt or uncle that you had, that you saw, that they seemed like they had everything, and you were like, okay, when I grow up, I want to be like that uncle. Uncle Leroy, every time he came to the family picnic, he had a new Cadillac, and he had a new watch, and he had a new chain. Or you might have seen Aunt Betty. She always had the nice fur. She always seemed like she had a sugar daddy. That's a money mindset that we develop in our communities. And you might not even think about that. You're like, you know, that person is with him or her because of this. But it's a money mindset, that we have a lot of men who are not working, and they expect a female to take care of them. That is a subconscious economic mindset that they're portraying. Of course, there's other factors that factor into that, a lack of maturity and all of that. But still, economically speaking, when they're not bringing any bread to the table, and they're not even bringing any butter to go to on with the bread, then where did that mindset come from that they can lay up and still be taken care of? Because money makes the world go around. So there's a barter system that's being portrayed right there. You're bartering your time, this time with them, and in exchange for it, you're willing to pay the bills and do whatever as long as he's there. Same thing goes vice versa. Men do the same thing. They have a woman that's really not benefiting them in any kind of way in their life, but they're willing to spend on her for that, which brings me to a thought that I had earlier as I was driving and I was thinking about this show. Think about the subconscious mindset that we're functioning under as a people when it comes to our money, our wealth, our economics. Think about the fact that a man used to have to pay for his wife to be free in order to have her. And men are still willing to pay women today to have them. Now, I'm not knocking anybody's hustle or anything like that, but think about the strip clubs and how much money that they make. And think of how they're set up. And think about the pictures that you've seen of the auction block. And our women and men, especially women, being paraded on that auction block. You look at some of the pictures they have staked in the back, like the pole that's on the stage. They were naked, and they were being bid on. Of course, we have male strip clubs or whatever, but even that, you know, if you think about the psychology of that, but just predominantly when you hear stripper, what's the first thing you think about? You think about a female. And what do you think about when you think about a black female? For us, I mean, of course, there's white strippers too. But again, I'm talking about us. This is a family conversation, so we don't have to bring everybody in. I'm talking about us. Think about it. Think about how deep our self-defeating money paradigms go and what's standing in the way of us being able to truly acquire real wealth. And not just when I talked about a few weeks ago about the real definition of wealth, it's not just money, which is why I'm constantly saying redefining wealth. Wealth is being able to have of an abundance of resources, being able to control the resource of time, being able to control the resource of knowledge, the resource of talent, yourself as a resource, how you exchange the dollar for what you do. So we have to look at the fact that our money mindsets, our psychology, our self-defeating paradigms that are being carried in our DNA, which is stopping us from being able to truly acquire the wealth that we need to be able to get up into a better position as a people. We have there's studies that are showing that by the year 2020, which is next year, and the black community will have a spending power of $1.5 trillion in the U.S., higher than that of any other race in this country, but yet our dollar only circulates like 6 hours within our community. So why are we able to get the money in our hand, but we can't keep it? Why are we able to get things, but we can't make the things work for us? We're able to get nice houses, nice cars, but we lose them. We have all of these people in our community who are millionaires as far as rappers and singers and basketball players and football players and different things like that who acquire money. But yet we're poor as a people, and then when their careers are over or their money stops, they're broke just like the regular average person. How do you go from making millions of dollars for months, for years? I don't care if you only got that $1 million contract and you got paid one time off of it when you came from nothing and then you leave with nothing. Or that the people that are advising these people who get this type of money in their hands, they're not advising them on truly what to do with it to be able to multiply that and invest wisely with what they've been given. Or even on the average Joe level, if you have a job where you're able to make your bills and you still have money left over, how do you get out of the place where you're just slaving away for somebody else? I don't even care if you like your job. You're still slaving away for someone else's dream. And at any given time, they can take you and cut you out of their picture, and what are you left with? Why are we not focusing on acquiring property or looking at property that could possibly be left in our lineage? Like, my family is from Mississippi, Kosciuszko, Mississippi, and a year ago last month, we took a trip to go visit our family members, and we were looking at the different pictures, and we asked to go see the gravesite. Our family grave site, and our great uncle was showing us all of this land, talking about, there's 300 acres over here, this many acres over here, da 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 da. This part belonged to your grandmother after our parents passed away. Each one of the children got something, and then when they passed away, their children got. But we don't know anything about our family's history. We get excited about the ancestry DNA, want to know where we come from, which I ain't asking nobody if that's what, you know, you want to know that. That's cool. You want to know what part of the country your family was from and then what part of the world your family originated from. That's cool. But what about your economic ancestry? Do you know what type of skills your ancestors possessed? Were they businessmen, businesswomen, and what type of businesses did they own? Were they into agriculture? Were they farmers? Were they storekeepers? Were they seamstresses? Were they artists, musicians? And wherever they came from, did they buy any property? Did they own anything? Generational wealth that we need to know about. And if your family doesn't have a wealth chain, why? And you might say, Sophia, that's obvious. I mean, too, you know, people were broke. They didn't, but really, were they? We had Black Wall Street. We had doctors and lawyers and architects that came out of us. But we only get taught the poor side by those who make up and write history. We already know that we obviously descended from kings and queens. Well, that right there lets you know that we have a generational wealth chain. And again, we look at wealth being defined as more than just money, but defined as talent and resources. your mind should start turning. Your brain should open up. And your subconscious should start to take a shift. Now, going back to the foundation of this conversation and the topic of this topic for tonight, why money is the number two cause of divorce, money issues, money problems. One thing that I strongly believe is, first of all, as I said already, we don't communicate in our relationships, which I don't know why. I mean, I can surmise why we don't. Which goes into the fact that we've never really been taught the art of communication. We don't understand the importance of communication for people. Also, depending on how you were raised, different things that happened in your life, talking was not a big thing in most of our families. We might have talked at each other, but not to each other. We have always been taught as a people to be strong and not show a lot of emotion, being able to get by, which I also believe plays a strong part in why we don't communicate the way that we should. But also, as I said, these are just some of my opinions. I haven't done any scientific research or anything like that to substantiate my thoughts. But if you have something that you would like to share, if you're listening, or something that you'd like to add to it, please feel free to do so. Again, if you're listening by the app, it's 563-999-3682. And if you've already dialed in and you want to get in on the conversation, just press 1 and I'll unmute your line. But again, I think that part of it is that we don't understand the science of mating. So when we get with someone, we get with them because they fulfill the emptiness inside of us. They fulfill something for us that we were looking for the previous person to fulfill, or we were looking for our parents to fulfill, or we were left, a hole was left because of some abuse that we've experienced. So when we get with someone, we're not talking about building empires. We're not talking about building generational wealth. We're not talking about creating gods or geniuses by when we come together and have children, having children. We're not talking about those things. So it kind of is obvious that economics would not come up because, for one thing, we also look at the fact, especially of us as women, we're taught that if we ask a man anything about finances or money, then we automatically get labeled as a gold digger. Also, if we meet a man who might be struggling financially or whatever, and we choose not to further engage with him for whatever reason, then we can be accused of not giving a brother a chance. Or if you're a man and you meet a woman and you're taught that you're supposed to take care of this woman and that's what men do, then you don't ask anything about her economics. You automatically go into a mode of Captain Saver. I'm not going to say ho because that's not always the case, but you just become a savior. So we don't discuss the economic issues of each other. We don't discuss credit. We don't discuss previous, you know, how you handle money. You have a shopping addiction, you know. Well, how do you feel about saving? How do you feel about budgeting? We don't have these conversations. They're grown people conversations, but we'll have conversations about sex all day long, about what you want done to you, how you like it done to you, and all this other stuff. Or we'll talk about food, what's your favorite color, you want to go to the movies. But the things that are going to give us a strong foundation and help sustain us as our relationship grows and builds on top of each other, we don't talk about those things. We don't, I did a show on this like sometime last year, we don't think about the fact that there's always going to be a line of people that want to put on the jersey, but it's not about the person who can get on the team, but the person that can help you win the ring. That's what we should be looking for. We should be looking for the ability to be able to win the championship and how we can elevate each other and how we can excel each other. Now, I'm not saying that every person that has a strained financial situation is a bad person or they're all automatically out of the box for being in a relationship. But the fact is where is their mindset? What are they thinking about? How did they get there? Was it really some unfortunate circumstance that got them into the situation and they're taking their time to get out of it? Or was it just neglectful and they were just pissing away money for lack of a better term? Like, one of the things that I realized and paid attention to when I was only 21, and of course no one taught me this, but as I said, I had my own place. I had a pretty good amount of money in the bank. And I was really responsible with my money. I was coming up out of a hole because I met my oldest son's father, and I had a nice sum of money in the bank and multiple credit cards. I was 18, 19-ish. And, you know, back in that day, they saw that you had good credit. They would send you the credit card in the mail, and all you had to do was call and activate it. You didn't even have to fill out any type of request. So I naively let him trick me into using my money to so-called flip, and I never saw it again. It actually ended up in a hole. So I had moved back in with my parents after having my son, and I had lost my job. So I was digging myself out of a hole, but I was doing it fairly rapidly because I've always been a hustler and always been a go-getter and always willing to do what needed to be done to get to the next level. But my ex-husband was riding. He didn't have his own place. He was 4 years older than me. Didn't have his own place. He had a car, but didn't have a license. He really didn't mind spending freely. Different little things that maybe if I had really took heed to or paid attention, I would have known that he did not know how to handle his money whatsoever. Not to mention the type of business that he was in at a young age. A lot of the men that were around him, they were not teaching him about economics. They were too busy trying to spend money quickly, trick on women. There was one man, though, that I wish he would have paid more attention to because he was married and his thing was investing and being smart about his money. But he kind of gravitated more to the men who were tricking off their money and spending it on women. So he picked up those habits. Not to mention, because he had so low self-esteem, him having money, he felt made him better. So that boosted his self-esteem, which was a false sense of esteem, a false sense of ego, which is another money mindset that we have to address and look at and see if we have an issue. So, again, when we're looking into mating, we're not looking at these various factors that will help us to know whether or not we have a partner that's going to be able to help us get to the next level that we're on. We very rarely talk about even having a level. Some of us are just happy that somebody wants us and we ain't got to play the dating game no more. So keep it real. But it's important we're in a relationship and we're thinking that this is a person that we want to be with, that we got to talk about our money. And not in a way where we're trying to put each other down, but to see where their mindset is, to see like, hey, yeah, my credit is jacked up, buddy, because this happened and that happened and it was out of my control. But this is what I'm doing right now to make that up and correct that and get this done. Can deal with it, can handle it, because I see where your mind is. And I see that you're not out here trying to buy a bunch of different stuff and do a lot of different things because you're trying to impress somebody with your money. So those are some, that's an important aspect that we need to focus on when it comes to our relationships. And I'm going to pause what I'm saying right now because I see that I do have a caller, and I'm going to unmute your line here, hold on just a second, so that you can So, caller number ending 5590.
Yes, hi. How are you doing today?
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm
doing really good. What are you doing?
how can, are you, go ahead, do you have something you'd like to share?
Yeah,
you understand, right?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up really bad. Okay, so I don't know what that was. I'm not sure if that was some person that was really calling or if something else was going on. So I couldn't really understand what you were saying. You're breaking up really bad. But anyway, as I was saying, it's very important that once we do get into a relationship or we're in a marriage that we talk about our finances. Because what I believe part of the reason why we can't handle the stress of financial issues that come into our relationships, that come into our marriage, is because we don't talk about or we don't plan. Just ask yourself at this point, if you're in a marriage, if you're in a relationship, and first of all, have you identified what your financial goals are for your family, for your relationship, even personally, if you, even if you're single? Have you identified what your financial goals are for the next year? Let's scale it back. For the next month, the next 3 months, 6 months, into a year. Have you looked at what your financial goals are? Financial goals for the first 30 days should be a monthly budget. You should always have a monthly budget set in place so that you know where your money is going. Now, for me, there have been certain points in my life where doing a budget was hard because my income wasn't steady. Being an entrepreneur, a lot of the times trying to get up and started, there's a lot of fluctuations in income, but that's still no excuse. You have to be able to have a budget. So that should be your financial, your 30-day, one of your 30-day financial goals. And I believe that if you're a couple, you should sit down and go over this budget at the beginning of the month or at the end of the month for the next month, because you both should be on the same page. Because if God forbid something happens to one of you, you already will be a step ahead of the game because, one, you'll know what it is that you need to have in order to be able to pick up that extra load that could be left on you if something were to happen to your partner. Also, both of you need to know that so that you're on the same page when it comes to how you're going to spend. Now, there's some people out there that say that, you know, maybe you shouldn't have a joint account, or if you have a joint account for the bills, and then each one of you have a separate account for something else. But however you structure it, it should be something that you both talk about. I don't believe in hiding money from your significant other. If it's to the point where your relationship is so bad that you have to hide money from your partner, that's a huge, huge issue. And I would suggest that you go to counseling or get a relationship coach to talk about why that is necessary. If it's because one of you or the partner that you're trying to hide money from is not good with budgeting or with finances, then that's another story. And that's something that you need to address, but you can't sweep it under the rug and act as if that's not a problem that exists, because it will continue to erode the trust in your relationship. If you can't trust your partner with money, then again, that's a very serious issue. And I see that I have a caller here.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm just wondering if I have
And so, this is what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to please stop calling the show if you're not going to say anything that's productive. And if you're having problems with your phone, then I need you to go to another one. Thank you very much. So that's one of the things, is that knowing where you're at with your financial goals as a couple, I believe that would help to solve this issue of having that would be a huge benefit to helping to solve the issue of having conflict when it comes to money. Also, as an individual, you need to know what your financial hangups are. And I don't think that we think about that either as individuals when it comes to our money. One thing I had to really learn for myself how to get out of is wanting something that might be a dollar or two and really having an internal argument about whether or not to spend this dollar or whatever. And and it would actually send out the wrong type of energy that would keep me in an impoverished mindset. And so one of the things that I believe is very important is, excuse me here, I'm sorry if you're listening to me, but I am trying to, I believe that this person, I'm not going to allow this to happen on my show, so I'm sending out a little bit of an SOS. But but we have to understand what our own money hangups are. So if you grew, so a really important one is for, again, I'll just use the example of how I was raised about the man being the one to be the breadwinner and him being a security blanket financially. So if you as a woman, for example, if you have the underlying mindset that that's what you expect in your relationship, that you want him to bring you more money than you do, you have to visit and really have a come to Jesus moment with yourself on the realistic expectation of that happening in your relationship. If you're already married or you're already with someone in a relationship and you're pretty deep into the relationship and he makes less than you, or maybe you're in a position where you make more than him and you're starting to subconsciously look at him sideways, that's a conversation that you need to have with yourself, because it's not usually the spoken things that erode the foundation of our relationship, but the unspoken things. And maybe you feel like you want to shop and spend more money, but you can't because you're carrying more of the weight. Or maybe he got laid off and he hasn't found a job yet. And you're like, you know, I have a good man, I have a good husband, and he loves me. He's never disrespected me. When he did have a job, he was doing what he needed to do. And the job that he has now is not the same amount of money that he used to make, but he's still giving me what he can. But why am I still feeling this way? Why am I still looking at him sideways like he's not doing his part? That means that there's an internal conversation that you need to have with yourself and handle that money mindset, that self-defeating paradigm, that pattern, and find out where it came from. Because a lot of us have picked up so many things from our childhood, so many things from our youth that we're not even realizing that we picked up. another thing that I subconsciously picked up from my mother is that she was a very strong woman, and she handled the finances primarily in our home. And so, you know, that was one of the things that that she did was she hid money from my father. And so I kind of subconsciously would do that with my ex-husband, thinking that I needed to do that because I never knew when he wasn't going to do anything for us or he wasn't going to provide for us. And, again, I see that I have a caller on the line. I thank you for calling. Welcome to the Mississippi Radio Network.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you? Thank you for calling me.
I'm doing pretty good, too. Actually, I ended up having a problem earlier today. I ended up fucking a squirrel in Central Park, and I killed it. So basically, can you explain to me how I get funding or death of that squirrel so I can get a funeral going for
it? Why do you keep calling this? Can you do something different, please, to stop calling me? Okay, again, I'm not going to answer that number. He keeps calling from different numbers, but that's okay. So, anyway, as I was saying, being able to understand why your personal money hang-ups and why you do what you do and why what you expect when you go into a relationship is very important, because if it start having money issues in your relationship, because we feel that money is a security blanket. Our economics is very big for us. If you don't have money, how are you going to live? Where are you going to live? How are you going to eat? How are you going to pay your bills? People have had heart attacks, and they go into stress mode when their money becomes funny. For lack of a better term. But again, as I was saying, it's important that it's important that we, especially as Black women, really understand our subconscious money paradigms. Because one of the articles that I read talked about how marrying your peer is a tougher prospect for Black women when it comes to economics. I'm sorry, here again, I'm trying to deal with this person that keeps calling into the show and being very disrespectful. But that's one of the divisions that I believe us as Black women, we really, really get played on. We really, I've talked to a couple of brothers. One of them has become a really good friend of mine. We've been talking, and over the last couple of months, I've ran into brothers and we've had a conversation, and they talk about how they are finding themselves intimidated by women who have degrees and a certain kind of money, a certain economic status, because we can have a tendency to come off very arrogant and very dismissing because we think that we've arrived at a certain level. So we have the really crazy notion, like, since I make six figures, I'm not going to talk to a man who makes less than that because he won't know how to function in my circle. So the game is getting played on us, because instead of us looking at the fact that we're being blessed to be able to bring in this type of income, and how can we link ourselves to a brother who has a millionaire mindset but not have millionaire pockets at this moment to be able to build something greater than where we are? And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say redefining wealth, understanding the importance of marriage, money, and family matters, understanding how economics can help us to build the empire, how we can scientifically mate with a person and why we're there. We already know that we as black women are really unassuming to our open enemy. So he doesn't look at us as a threat. He's actually looking at us as the gold mine that we are, but we're so busy thinking that we've arrived. And again, don't misunderstand what I'm saying by thinking that I'm knocking us as women for having achieved a certain level of education or a certain economic status, because I am educated too. I'm not right now where I want to be at economically, but I've been there. But I would never want to, I pray that I don't ever get to the point where I'm looking at a brother sideways because of a piece of paper or a digit. We have to understand that we're in this thing together. So I'm not saying that you just go and you invite a brother to come and see your circle of influence that really doesn't have a clue about what he wants to do in his life, and he's just playing games and playing time, and he's not really ready to be a man. But what I'm saying is, don't allow money to be the complete factor and why you don't let someone into your life because you're looking at the digit. So if you're not understanding that maybe the reason that you've acquired wealth is because you don't want to be like your mother who relied on your father who was in control of the money but he abused her, those are different emotional triggers that we're functioning from when it comes to our money. Or maybe when you were growing up, you were so poor that you couldn't afford anything but hand-me-downs. You subconsciously developed the mindset that no matter what it takes, I'm not going to allow myself to be poor, so I'm going to have all the money that I need, and I'm going to go and spend, and people are going to look at me because I can go shopping, and I can buy the latest fashions, and I can buy the latest car, I can buy the biggest house, but you're still miserable inside. So you're functioning from a money mindset that really is keeping you impoverished because you're in debt up to your eyeballs, and you don't know how to get out of it, and you're really miserable. And what are we teaching our children when it comes down to passing on these defeating subconscious economic patterns? And I'll continue to state that we as a people, we have the financial power, but we lack the literacy on what it is that we need to do with it. We are going to be responsible for finding our own freedom, our own economic freedom. We can continue to wait for someone else to do it, but it's not going to happen. Why? Because it's not important to them. Now, when, I don't know if you've ever read this or seen articles, but it's a study that's shown that when in this country, when they start to redesign fashions and they start to redesign, or they want to look at the trends, they study black women and they study black people to see what's hot, what will sell. Why? Because we have the largest spending power in this country. So why would you not go to the people that are going to buy what it is that you're selling? Would you go to the Amish and study to see what the newest Lincoln Navigator needs to have in features, what type of horsepower it needs to have, if it needs to have an aux cord, if it needs to have heated seats, or when the baseboard that comes out when you're getting ready to step up? No, why? Because that's not your market. They don't hold the interest. So we're constantly being played on our economic ability. But if we were to wake up and understand how money works and the fact that we have to begin to leave a different legacy for our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, as I stated last week, my goal is that when I begin to have grandchildren, on their first birthday, every child will receive some type of property, whether it's house or a piece of land, that they'll be able to hold on to and do something with. I don't care if they're just 1 year old. This is a part of building a generational wealth cycle. You see this all the time when it comes to white community. You see this in the current sitting president of this country. You know, for many years, he's always been touted as an economic guru. And who knew that it would take for him to be sitting in the seat of the leader of the quote-unquote free world to see how really economically ignorant he is. One thing that he did intelligently is that he got people around him who knew more than him. What do you think the show The Apprentice was about? It wasn't about just having good TV ratings or anything, but he was trying to get at the best of the best. It ended up turning into something different when he started with the whole celebrity thing, and it really just became about, you know, show and a whole bunch of other BS. But when the show started off, he was looking for the best of the best to be able to run his company. His companies or whatever company he had that he was trying to put them in position. He didn't know anything. Also, when it came to how he used his money, he filed bankruptcy multiple times. He really didn't know how to handle money. He just knew how to play the game. And I'll forever say this as well. We have to stop thinking that we're playing checkers and understand that we're playing a game of chess, a game of strategy, that you have to be able to predict your opponent's next move before they even move that piece. You have to look at the board and be like, okay, they could go left here with this piece, right here with this piece, three squares with this piece. They can go diagonal with this piece or go up and down. And what's going to happen by them moving this piece in this kind of way? Oh, they're going to be able to capture this piece, which is very important to me, or this piece was not as important, but if I lose this piece, it's not going to affect me this way. That's the way that you have to be able to think and the way that we're functioning in a society today. So if I have poor credit, it's going to affect me in this. I do credit repair right now. So if you're listening and you need credit repair, you can go to my website, www.newseedfinancials.com. and request a free consultation. And I'm not doing this because it's my business. I'm literally doing this because I see what is happening to us as a people not understanding the credit game. And you might be like, well, I'm not trying to get a loan, and I'm trying to pay cash for everything and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's a good mindset to have, and that's good. But the importance of credit is growing so deep that you're not even going to be able to get a job if you don't have credit or you have poor credit. If you want to be an entrepreneur, a lot of people say, well, they won't look at my personal credit. I'll just get business credit. Not so. If you're a new entrepreneur, they're going to look at your personal credit because you don't have any business credit yet. And they're not just going to let you use your EIN number to just start building credit and you've got a clean slate. No, they're going to look at your personal credit. So if you want to acquire land, if you want to receive money through loans or through donations, if you want to get a job, if you want to get a car that's not as ragged, if you want to get utilities in your name, they're going to be looking at your credit, and there's a way that the game is played that they don't want to tell you about. They'll have you thinking that there's no way that you can improve it. You've got to pay this, and you've got to do this with it. Not so. So if you're looking at a way to be able to improve your credit because you need to, you want to acquire a house or something within the next 6 months to a year, or a new car, or you need to get a new job, or whatever it is, I need you to get in touch with me. And you can do that by going to www.newseedfinancials.com. Also, if you are in a position where there's money matters that are they're cropping up in your relationship, or you need to get financial literacy, you need to get financial wellness, you need help to prepare your financial goals, putting them in actionable steps so that they're achievable, and that you need to do something with your money so that you can learn how to make your money work for you and stop just being able to live in a poverty mindset like, I really don't have no money, I can't do this, then I need you to go to my site, www.operationnewlegacy.com, and request a free consultation there. And look and see into my Wealth Builder Academy at my Fit Finances and Money Management course. I also do self-empowerment. I help build business plans for entrepreneurs. I also do business consultation. And I also do relationship coaching when it comes to learning how to communicate your financial problems in your relationship. And you're like, well, dang, you do a lot. Yes, because all of this is connected to us going to the next level. All of this is connected to us being able to build a solid foundation in our families, in our communities, so that we can get to the point where we can economically build and be able to sustain, not just fund our own freedom, but sustain it. As I mentioned to you last week, when it comes to the program that our brother Maurice is trying to get put together for us being able to have our own in our own territory, some of us out there, we should be able to economically fund this thing. We may not be at the forefront of being sitting at the table of being able to help in certain areas, but we need to be able to have the wherewithal where we can get some type of loans if we need to in order to be able to do what we need to do to get off of that system. We need to do what there was a program that he did when he was talking to his brothers about being able to have our own currency type of our own, I don't want to say currency, but our own means of being able to use the Bitcoin to have our own funding system. We need to look at that. We need to be able to have the economic wherewithal to purchase the land and outright. We need to learn how the system works when it comes to bargaining, how all of this works, because it's a very important part of us being able to be free. We need to learn how to shift our mindset when it comes to being wealthy, because some of us cannot obtain wealth, some of us cannot attract wealth because we're too afraid to be able to be wealthy. We still have a mindset that that's only for white people. When we think about riches, we only think about white people, or we only think about rappers, or we only think about sports players. Not so. All of us have a talent or a skill that will solve the problem for someone else and they're willing to pay for it. All of us have something that we can turn our hobby or we can pass into something that's profitable, or we can turn our passion into a profit, our purpose into a profit. But we have to be quiet and still long enough to be able to address the self-defeating patterns that we're living in every single day. Are you hoarding money? Are you holding on to your money so tight that nothing can get in and nothing can get out? Or are you just free spending and be like, I get paid next week again, so I'll be okay? I mentioned last week, if the government shutdown didn't show us anything else, it should show us where we are economically as a people. We should never be put in a state of panic that we won't be able to eat based on what the government does. Our elderly in our community should never be faced with the scare of not being able to eat because of what the government does, not being able to pay the utilities because of what the government does, not being able to have adequate housing because of what the government does, not being able to have adequate health care because of what the government does. When we have all that we need in our community to be able to take care of ourselves, our elderly, our children, our ill, we have to begin to develop the village mentality once again. And as I stated earlier, thinking about the fact that the way that we think about money goes back generations and generations and generations and generations, and it's subconsciously rooted in us that we have to work extra hard to be able to get a dollar. somewhere deeply laden in our DNA for brothers, you have to buy women. Because on the plantation, you had to buy your wife in order to have her to yourself. But our freedom wasn't even guaranteed then because she could be kidnapped again. Or all we knew was that we were sharecropping after we got out of slavery. Well, in slavery, we really didn't even have money. We were taken care of by the slave master, which, again, if you look at it today in modern-day slavery, us being connected to an economic system set up by the government to take care of us through the SNAP system, through Medicaid, through WIC. Now, again, I'm not knocking anybody that's on it because I've been on it myself. And we all need assistance from time to time. But what I'm saying is when you allow it to become your end-all, be-all, and you rely on the government to take care of you, and you're comfortable with that, you're part of the modern-day slavery system. Modern-day slavery is not just a prison system. It's the welfare system. Because not only is it separating and breaking up our homes, but you're slaves to whatever they want to do to you. So when it came to the fact that they sent out the alert that they didn't know if the government shutdown was going to end and people were going to receive their food stamp benefits, so they released them early. And I appreciate the concern that people were having for people who were on food stamps, that they weren't or needed to go to the food bank, that they weren't going to be able to eat. But why the bigger question wasn't asked to see the big gaping hole that is in the welfare system, that people are not able to be self-sufficient and there's no incentive for them to be, because as soon as you get on your knees, you can't even stay on your feet. As soon as it looks like you're about to get to your knees from being knocked down and get in a bad situation, they're completely pulling that rug from underneath you. So you either have to hustle on the side and lie about your income so you can still try to get the little bit of assistance that they give you while you're trying to make ends meet. Or you just have to learn to adapt within the system that they set up, so that you can receive medication that you need or receive medical treatment or be able to have groceries regularly or get your utilities paid or afford rent. We have to look at the psychological game that is being played on us when it comes to economic supply and demand, the shift. Our spending power, $1.5 trillion. If we really look at how powerful we are, when they talk about these boycotts, one of the things that, you know, the reason that they call it a boycott is because they know that not having money hurts the pocket of these big corporations. But we can be so ignorant as a people that we're like, oh, you know, I like that brand. I don't know what you're talking about. That's always been my brand. And we as a people do this to each other and we do that to shut up. We already know what we do to each other as a people. But why do we do it? But does that justify what they're doing? Blackface clothing, nooses, chains, monkey stuff. But because we want to wear what we want to wear and we want to continue to feed them, we want to continue to feed their white supremacy, we don't even entertain it. So you have people like Floyd Mayweather, instead of looking deeper into the trick that's being played, you go buy out the store. Why? Because you want to show your loyalty to Gucci? You can't even spell Gucci. I ain't trying to down the brother, but really, Nikki, you can't even spell Gucci. But you want to show them how loyal you are to their brand? Why? So when people call for a boycott of a certain brand or a certain company or a certain person, it's because they understand that money, the lack of money hurts the pocket. And that's a negotiation tool. That's a negotiation factor. This country is ran by economics. So we can march in the street all we want to, and we can protest all we want to. But think about the irony of, if I know this right or not, but I'm pretty sure there has to be some type of permit paid for when you have large gatherings in Washington or wherever, New York, wherever you're meeting. I'm pretty sure you got to pull some type of permit, pay for some type of permit in order for that to happen. There's other things, other costs that go into you planning and preparing. So the same system that you're protesting against is benefiting from your protest. So, of course, they're going to let you come. Of course, they're going to let you do your thing. But we have to understand that we really are at war, and it's not. It's not a physical war all the way yet. It's mental. And our ignorance is what's keeping us enslaved. Not understanding, not observing how this game is being played. We're asking if we can play flying kings in a game of chess. And they're laughing at us. I'm like, yeah, nigga, you can. They're not telling us that we got it all wrong and we'll never win the game. They just let us keep making up stuff and agreeing with this and laughing with this. All the time, we're falling further and further behind, and we're getting taken advantage of. Now, I don't know how true it is. I'm just going to say, allegedly, Michael Jordan invested in the prison system. Now, I know a lot of people were upset about that, and they were like, well, I'm going to not buy any Jordan because he has invested in prison, and we know that a majority of the people in prison are our people. True. Very true. One, I don't understand you're going to boycott him, but you won't boycott these white people. But again, it's a different story for another day. But two, I actually think that's an ingenious idea. I think that we need to get to the point where we start investing in the prison industry and we change things. If they're going to benefit off of having our people in prison and we're invested in the prison system and we get to have a voice as investors on what to change and how to change. Something, the treatment, the facility, how it's set up, how it looks. Doesn't that make a little sense? Because why do you think they invested in it? It's profitable. So as long as the government is able to wrongly convict our people, send them to prison for long term, make up things, people spending years in prison for weed charges and drug charges, and when they really have problems and they need help, that industry is always going to be there. See, and maybe some people might be like, you know, you're really demented, you're really just like the white man, you're trying to profit off the backs of our people. No, I'm not. What I'm saying is that if we're looking at different industries that they're already, that we can't stop anything from happening at this point. There's no way that we cannot stop them from flooding the prisons with our people at this point. We're going to get there because we're going to start to educate, and we're going to start to see these young brothers start to take notice of what's really going on in the world and these young sisters, and they're going to stop this. But as long as this is still in place and we haven't gotten there to the point, why are we not looking at how they're making money off of us and use that to be able to fund what we need to fund? What that seems to mean. I'll wait. If our children are in these schools and they're being labeled and they're being sent to remedial classes because they need extra attention with learning, why are we, as a people, those of us who are teachers or psychologists, know that a majority of our children are seeing these labels and they're not even true. They're being labeled that way because the schools get more funding for children with special needs who need special programs and plans. I know my son was labeled as being ADHD, and whatever that plan was that they had for him, whatever they called it, they never used it. But because he had gotten a prescription from a doctor and they had the special write-up on whatever, they got money from the government for him. But there was nothing wrong with him. They just weren't able to teach on his level where he would stay, where he would stay engaged because he was so bored about what they were saying. But why can't a group of us come together and teach these children and help these children and get the government funding that is being given to the school to build our own facilities and take care of these children properly, the way they need to be treated? Those are the kind of things that I think about. Because we have to begin to take back our economic power. We have to begin to educate ourselves on how this system works. And that's my goal. That is something, again, that I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about helping people who are business-minded build their businesses, build it in a way of success, not just go open up a door somewhere and throw up a name and throw some products in there and think that you're just going to be successful. No, you have to learn how your taxes work. You have to have a plan in place for 3, 6, 9, 12, 24, 36, 48, what is it, 62 months? Because that's going to help you be successful. So that's why I offer entrepreneur consulting, small business consulting, help you get organized so that you can have longevity and pass this down. Because I'm sure you just didn't start a business because you didn't have nothing else to do with your life and you wanted the headache of making your own money. Nah, I've never met an entrepreneur that was like, yeah, I was kind of bored, so I just decided to open up a business and stress myself out every day about how am I going to make ends meet, are the lights going to stay on, are they going to come and tow my car and just lock the front? Yeah, sounds pretty good to me. Guess I'll try that. Absolutely not. And also to teach budgeting and financial literacy so that you can understand what that looks like, how to invest your money. So many people are getting back tax money right now. And me being a tax preparer, this has been the strangest tax season that I've ever had. So many different changes and things are happening in the government, and deductions are being taken away. So you can't rely that on the fact that every year you're going to get that big refund check because you have a few children, because that can be taken away. You have to learn how to plan. Use that money to invest, to double up. And I ain't talking about no dope or nothing like that. How can you invest in some property? How can you go to an auction and invest in some property? How can you start an investment club and get with people of like mind and y'all pull y'all money together and then go invest in something or buy something and split the profit? That's my passion. That's what where I want to see us be able to come, because there's so many things that are happening and shifting right now in this country economically, and because we're behind the eight ball and we're watching reality TV shows that are not reality, we're living vicariously through the people on the screen, we're getting screwed. And there's nothing that I want more than to see my people come up, have our own land, to be together, to do what it is that we feel is our gift and our talent. I make money off of it. So, again, if you are in need of credit repair, increasing your score, being able to have things removed from your credit, need some help with budgeting, please visit my site at www.newseedfinancials.com, newseedfinancials.com, and click Get Started. Sign up for your free consultation. It doesn't obligate you to anything. I just want the opportunity to speak with you on how I might be able to help you repair your credit and increase your credit score so that you can start having the things that you desire to have and living the type of life that you desire to live. Also, if you're looking for small business consulting, if you're looking for financial help with budgeting, get your money on track, if you're looking for self-empowerment and relationship counseling, because things are happening that you're realizing that, hey, I'm not getting the money that I want because something is going on in my psyche, or our marriage is on the rocks because all of a sudden we're just fighting about money all the time, and I know that we can get through this, then I want you to go to OperationNewLegacy.com. I want to have a conversation with you because this thing is so serious. As I also mentioned last week, we have to look at what's coming up for our children, what's coming up for us in 30 years. It's not going to be no retirement where we can just hope that we're going to live off retirement money. I'm not trying to be no Walmart greeter, and I hope you're not either. I don't want my parents to do that. For some of us, we really need to get our economics together because we have parents that are at the brink where things are going to start switching and changing for their lives, and they're going to need medical care, and we have to be able to provide it for them, not ship them off to some type of nursing home, but bring them into our home and be able to take care of them, knowing that they're well taken care of. That's a goal of mine. And for our children, so many brick-and-mortar businesses are closing every day. We shouldn't want to put our children in a position where they have to break up a bunch of student loan bills in order to go to college to get a degree that they won't use because they're not really sure what they want or where they want to go. But we can teach them about money because that's something that they will always need to know about and something that will always be a part of their life. So whether or not they have an entrepreneur or dream, all my children want to start their own businesses. And every time we talk, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know we can take this and turn this into a business for you, right? Okay, got you. Let mama work on it. We're going to name it. We're going to do all of this. Because that's how they are. But that's something you also need to be able to teach your children. That right here, right now, I don't care if they're in high school, elementary, middle school. Shoot, you might have a baby that's created that doing something with toys that other people like. I don't know. But we have to be able to get to see the gifts in our children so that we can extract them and teach them how to be their own bosses, so that they can flourish in this world. So we have to look at that. That's coming up for our children. And do we want to lead them in a place of not being able, that we're leaving them debt?
All right, I'm back here with my sister Monique, and we're getting real, Kimo, so listen to me. Here is what I want you to understand about this whole thing.
But
as we try to come through this, because what I want really is for you to come through, because I know who you really are. And so what I want you to do is come through this with a different way. Because you, Monique, you my girl. I love you like a sister. I hate what's happening to you. I hate what they're saying that's not true. I want them to know that you are caring, that you are a great mother, that you are incredible talent. I don't like the fact that you've been blackballed. You can be unblackballed. You're too talented to have to worry about all this where the next one coming from. I want this to end for you. I want it to end for you, Monique, because I love you. Because these people are doing it the wrong way, and you're better than that. You are better than that. I probably should have called you as soon as, but I didn't. I got a lot of stuff going on, so I didn't. When I did call you, I listened to you, but I began telling you at the very beginning, I think we're going about this the wrong way. Now, we keep same stuff in the interim that keeps just making it worse. Hollywood know you
but it's making it worse for who?
It's making it worse for who? Okay, if you think it's cool, then it's cool.
That's what I'm saying.
But it's not cool, Mo. It's not cool.
For who?
The fact that we're sitting here arguing like this.
We're not arguing.
Okay, we're discussing.
You and your sister, we're having a conversation that mommy and daddy are here right now, and I'm going to punch you in your mouth. That's the conversation. Bam, bam. Right. I think what happens, though, is I've had to understand how to agree to disagree without being upset. And that's the thing. I disagree with my brother. I'm not upset with you. I love you. I disagree with the way Oprah, Lee, and Tyler did it. But I love them.
I'll give you that. Now, guess what we need to do to move forward and fix this?
Come on.
These people owe you an apology. You owe those people.